I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Hundreds of mourners paid their final respects to Jimmy Carter at Washington National Cathedral on Thursday. The one-term U.S. president was widely admired for his humanitarian work after leaving the White House. Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner reports.
Fellow Democratic President Joe Biden eulogized the 39th president.
Through it all, he showed us how character and faith start with ourselves and then flows to others.
All five living, current, and former U.S. presidents were in attendance. Before the ceremony began, Republican President-elect Donald Trump entered the cathedral with his wife, Melania. He shook hands with his former Vice President, Mike Pence, before sitting next to former President Barack Obama, with whom he chatted as introductory music played. To Obama's right were Laura and George W. Bush, and Hillary and Bill Clinton. Tens of thousands of Americans over the past 2 days filed through the rotunda of the U.S. Capitol to pay their respects to Carter, who was president from 1977 to 1981.
Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner. The worst wildfires in Los Angeles history are still burning. Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener reports.
On Thursday, flames continued to tear through the Pacific Palisades neighborhood, home to many celebrities. The massive wildfire there, together with the Eaton Fire to the east, has destroyed hundreds of homes. Several people have been killed, and the death toll is expected to rise. Nearly 180,000 people have been ordered to evacuate. Firefighters managed to make gains overnight in battling the Sunset Fire, which had forced mandatory evacuations in Hollywood and the Hollywood Hills.
Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener. This is VOA News. The outgoing U.S. Defense Secretary on Thursday urged Ukraine's allies to push ahead with vital security assistance for Kyiv as he wrapped up the 25th meeting of the Ukraine Defense Contact Group. VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden reports.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky led with supporters meeting in Germany.
We've come such a long way that it would honestly be crazy to drop the ball now.
The U.S.-led Ukraine Defense Contact Group has so far given Kyiv more than $126 billion in weapons, training, and equipment, including a just-unveiled $500 million package from the United States. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin says it's one of the great military success stories of our time.
This coalition has become the arsenal of Ukrainian democracy.
And he voiced hope the work of the coalition will continue, even after U.S. President-elect Donald Trump takes office later this month. Jeff Selden, VOA News, Washington.
The Biden administration has doubled down on its unusual court battle to derail a plea deal that the government itself reached with accused 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. It urged a federal appeals panel Thursday to block Mohammed's guilty plea from going forward as scheduled Friday at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Defense lawyers described the attempts to throw out the agreement as the latest in 2 decades of fitful and negligent mishandling of the case by the U.S. military and successive administrations. The fight has put the Biden administration at odds with the U.S. military officials that it had appointed to oversee justice in al-Qaeda's attacks on September 11, 2001 that killed nearly 3,000 people. Tech billionaire Elon Musk live-streamed his chat with a leader of Germany's far-right party on Thursday. AP correspondent Haya Benjwani reports.
He used the power of his social media platform, X, to amplify the party's message ahead of its upcoming national election. More than 200,000 accounts tuned into the live stream, which raised concerns across Europe about the world's richest man trying to influence foreign politics. The Tesla chief executive, who helped re-elect Donald Trump in the United States, spoke with Alisa Weidel, a co-leader of the Alternative for Germany party and its candidate for chancellor. Musk said he was strongly recommending that Germans vote for Weidel's party in next month's election. I'm Haya Benjwani.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbati in Washington. Today is Friday, January 10th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. African ministers meet in Uganda to shape 10-year food security and sustainability plans.
As the continent's agriculture sector ministers, I urge you to deliberately work to reduce Africa's over-reliance on food imports from outside the continent.
Gabon will hold presidential election in March this year. Chad opens investigations into Wednesday's presidential palace attack. Rwandan President Paul Kagame criticizes the peace process between his country and the Democratic Republic of Congo.
If anybody thinks Rwanda is in DRC, why should Rwanda be in DRC? They should ask themselves that question.
And the Supreme Court allows sentencing of Donald Trump to go forward. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa.
Agriculture Minister.
Africa's agriculture ministers are meeting in Uganda this week to discuss the best way to transform the continent's food production systems. The ministers hope to agree on a 10-year action plan to reduce Africa's reliance on food from outside the continent and adapt its farming practices to climate change and modern technology. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
Agriculture ministers from African countries and more than 2,000 delegates are meeting in Kampala to discuss sustainable agriculture and food production systems. Speaking at the opening of the summit, Uganda's Prime Minister, Robina Nabanja, urged ministers to provide policies and solutions that can make the continent food self-reliant.
As the continent's agriculture sector ministers, I urge you to deliberately work to reduce Africa's over-reliance on food imports from outside the continent. We must position the continent in such a manner that our agricultural sector is resilient to climate change as well as other shocks and is adaptive to advances in technology.
In recent years, Africa has witnessed a sharp increase in food prices due to droughts, floods, conflict and climate change. According to the UN Trade and Development Agency, UNCTAD, the number of people experiencing food insecurity worldwide increased from 512 million in 2014 to more than 790 million in 2021. The African ministers are meeting in Uganda again to review strategies for food security in the next 10 years, given the changing weather, people's food preferences, increased conflict, and shrinking agricultural farmlands. Despite the challenges ahead, David Nabarro, co-founder of the 4SD Foundation, an organization that works on the transformation of food systems, says that with cooperation between countries and organizations, Africa has the capacity to be food self-sufficient.
This could lead to Africa as a region becoming less of a region that needs to import nutritious food for its people and move to a situation, perhaps in 10 years, where it can be self-sufficient or even in some cases more exporting.
The director of the Institute of Livestock and Research Institute, Apollonier Jikeng, says strong collaboration and greater investments in agriculture by African governments could bring about lasting change in Africa's food production.
The food system transformation and the food system challenges have demonstrated that one organization cannot do it all. It's about a coalition. Really, I want to see that part strengthened. But more importantly, I would like to see governments committing to invest national budget to develop agriculture.
According to the analysts who track the progress of CADEP goals and targets, several countries such as Benin, Ethiopia, Lesotho and Malawi have spent more than 10% of their budgets to improve their agriculture sectors. The summit ends Saturday, and heads of state are expected to attend and endorse a CADEP strategy and action plan that could shape the continent's food systems for 10 years beginning in 2026. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
Rwandan President Paul Kagame criticized the peace process between his country and the Democratic Republic of Congo, the DRC, for failing to address what he calls the root causes of the conflict. His statement comes after a report from UN experts indicated that Rwandan troops were deployed in the DRC to support the M23 rebel group. Moses Abiyarimana reports.
During a Thursday news conference, President Paul Kagame said that the East African peace process and the Rwanda peace process have failed to address the root causes of the conflict that has seen Rwanda's relations with the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo deteriorate. He described the latest peace talks as a photo opportunity.
This problem can be addressed, but it cannot be addressed by just having processes where we have processes and we have leaders leading these processes. And what becomes more important is the camera appearance. It's being seen there to be signing something.
President Paul Kagame's comments come after an interim report released by the UN experts on Wednesday detailing how M23 rebels seized the Congolese towns with the help of neighboring Rwanda and set up a parallel government administration to control key mines and trade routes since April. The report indicated that about 3,000 to 4,000 Rwandan troops are deployed in eastern DRC. President Paul Kagame said that he will defend his country.
If anybody thinks Rwanda is in DRC, why should Rwanda be in DRC? They should ask themselves that question. If you don't blame Rwanda for being in DRC, can you also make an effort? Rwandan forces are in DRC, but why?
Kagame said that Democratic Republic of Congo authorities also need to address the threat to Rwandan national security due to the presence of the FDLR rebels. According to the Rwandan authorities, the FDLR has among the members alleged perpetrators of 1994 genocide in Rwanda embedded into DRC army. Meanwhile, earlier this week, the Rwandan-backed M23 rebel group says a mineral-rich town in North Kivu province, located in the eastern part of DRC. The eastern part of the country has experienced a decade-long conflict that have left 7.3 million people internally displaced. According to the Amnesty International, 6 million people have died as a result of conflict in DRC since 1998, and many of them killed by hunger and diseases. Dr. Nkere Ntanda is a professor of political science at the University of Kinshasa.
Of sitting around the table, you know, negotiating, nothing has ever succeeded. So as long as you continue to apply the same methods, you will continue to have the same results. To change the results, you have to change the method. And what we are saying is that as long as the DRC does not have the commitment to organizing its army to defend itself, to defend the territory, the crisis in the eastern part of Congo will continue.
The Democratic Republic of Congo joined the East African Community in 2022 in hopes that the regional bloc would resolve the conflict in the eastern part of the country caused by the M23 rebel group, which Kinshasa says is supported by Rwanda. However, Rwanda's President Paul Kagame says he will continue to defend Rwanda at any cost. Moses Aviarimana for Voice of America.
Gabon will hold presidential elections on March 22nd this year. Military leader General Brice Oligui Nguema made the announcement on Thursday. The country approved a new constitution last year, paving the way for the elections. It limits the president's time in office to 2 7-year terms. General Nguema has yet to say if he plans to run for president. Gabonese rights and democracy activist Frank Jokting tells me that the opposition is opposed to General Nguema running for president.
Well, I think that as days are going by, the president of transition of Gabon is realizing that less and less people are getting excited about it. So it's better for him to do it quickly. I think he's trying to capitalize on what he did in August 2023. But unfortunately, people are realizing that most of the promises he made to people, he didn't keep. And so for that particular reason, I think that's why he's in a hurry to get the election.
When we spoke the last time, it was during the constitutional referendum. Now, what does it say now about the military leaders? Can they run in this election that has been scheduled?
That's the big issue. Right now, the opposition people who love Gabon and their politicians are saying that Oligui Nguema should not present himself and run for presidency of Gabon in 2025 because he's military. But all the indications are showing us that he's getting ready, and I believe that in a couple of weeks, people will come out to try to encourage him to run. But normally he can't do it because it's against the chart of the African Union, even from the CEMAC and all those different organizations, I mean, they will not go for it. So I don't know exactly how he's going to do it. I believe that some people also are saying that he will probably become a civilian. So it's very complicated. So I'm going to see the way it's going to pan out. But what is for sure, there's some voices right now in Gabon saying that he should not be a candidate for the presidency of Gabon in 2025.
That's interesting because I know the main opposition, they have yet to respond. Perhaps they think it's too early to respond because the announcement was just made. I wonder what they are going to be saying.
Actually, they did respond. They did not respond for the announcement of the election on March 22nd, 2025. But yesterday, the opposition had a press conference where they said that they are expecting a couple of things from this particular transition. They want the transition to end well, and the best way for the transition to end well is that Oligui Nguema should not run for president because that's what he promised. And then the army should not be involved closer or far from the coming election. It should be a civilian matter and not a military matter. So in other words, they are asking him and the military to go back to protecting the country and doing all those kind of things, but not running the country.
Frank John Ting is a Gabonese human rights and democracy activist. He was speaking with us from Toulouse, France. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, January 10th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Chad said Thursday that it had opened investigations into a foiled Wednesday night attack on the country's presidential palace. Troops were heavily deployed around the capital on Thursday, sparking some unease among residents of N'Djamena. The government said the attack had nothing to do with a visit by Chinese foreign minister to the palace several hours earlier. Moki Edwin Kizika reports from Yaoundé, in neighboring Cameroon.
Chadian State TV said civilians should not be scared by the unusual presence of a huge number of government troops, tactical vehicles and armored cars in the capital city, N'Djamena, especially around the presidential palace. The message, broadcast several times Thursday, added that civilians should go about their daily activities without fear. However, 27-year-old food seller Maimuna Yebgi said the presence of government troops on the streets scares people. She says Chad should have sent troops to villages out of the city center where the armed gangs that attacked President Mahamat Idriss Deby's palace may be hiding. She says she is sure that attackers who know government troops are looking for them couldn't be hiding in the city center several hours after the attack. Officials say the troops were deployed after a gang of 24 heavily armed assailants attacked the presidential palace on Wednesday night. They say the attack was foiled by government troops. Chad military says 18 attackers were killed on the spot, and the body of one dead attacker was found Thursday morning in N'Djamena's streets. One member of the presidential guard was killed and two of his colleagues injured, according to the military. Chad's foreign minister and government spokesman, Abdirahman Kulamala, told State TV that close to 10 suspects have been arrested as investigations to determine the reasons for the attack proceed. The attack took place after Chad's government reiterated an order first issued last month for French troops stationed in the country to leave by January 31. The new order followed remarks this week by French President Emmanuel Macron, who said African countries are ungrateful for France's role in helping to fight jihadist insurgencies.
In response to Macron's remarks, Chadian President Mahamat Idriss Déby said that Chad is not benefiting much from military agreements with Paris and said the order for French troops to leave is irreversible and non-negotiable. Wednesday's attack on the presidential palace also coincided with the official visit to N'Djamena by Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi. Before the attack, Wang met with Déby at the palace and the two promised to increase economic and military ties. Monkey Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi on Thursday pledged Beijing's full support and military aid to the world's poorest continent as he wrapped up his South Africa tour in Nigeria. Wang began an Africa tour on January 6th, visiting Namibia, the Republic of Congo, and Chad before winding up his trip in Nigeria, where he held talks with Nigerian President Bola Ahmed Tinubu and Foreign Minister Yusuf Tuga in the capital, Abuja. Mozambique's main opposition leader returned from weeks of exile on Thursday, insisting that he won October's presidential election and welcomed by thousands of jubilant supporters, although one person was killed as police tried to disperse the crowds. The French news agency AFP says that several people were also wounded as police barred supporters from going to the international airport to meet Venancio Molar, who knelt on the ground holding a Bible as he exited the terminal. Donald Trump will be sworn in January 20th as the only U.S. president with felony convictions, and this week saw a flurry of activity over the court cases still open against him. On Friday, a New York judge is sentenced Donald Trump in one of the cases. VOA's senior Washington correspondent Caroline Presutti brings us the latest.
President-elect Donald Trump had gone through every appeal and even petitioned the U.S. Supreme Court to block sentencing in his highest-profile court case. But late Thursday, the High Court rejected his request to delay sentencing. The once-and-future president was found guilty last year of 34 counts of falsifying business records to hide hush money payments to a porn star.
This was a disgrace.
Political analysts like Shannon Bo O'Brien of the University of Texas say this case was personal to Trump.
He doesn't like to admit fault. He doesn't like to admit weaknesses or shortcomings.
New York Supreme Court Judge Juan Merchan, who presided over the trial, had denied a delay, but also said he would not sentence the former president to jail. Gary Rose teaches politics at Sacred Heart University.
I think the message that really is conveyed here is that no one is above the law, and that the process has played out, and it's going to now bring it to an end.
In a second and third case, a Trump-appointed judge this week temporarily blocked the Justice Department from releasing final reports from special counsel Jack Smith. The cases, both dismissed, involved the storage of classified documents and election interference with the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. This week, the president-elect reiterated his belief that Smith was appointed illegally.
He was thrown off the case in disgrace. Why should he be allowed to write a fake report? It'll only be a fake report.
Special counsels are required to file summary reports. The U.S. Attorney General said he would release Smith's report on the January 6th uprising at the Capitol. Making that public could hamper Trump's efforts to pardon those arrested. Again, Professor O'Brien.
If a lot of this comes to light, that a lot of this was planned and a lot of these activities were malicious and that they were criminal, he is giving people a free pass on criminal activity.
The fourth case deals with Georgia election interference. The prosecutor was removed due to an improper romantic relationship with an employee. So the case is at a standstill until it is dismissed or until another prosecutor is assigned. Again, Professor Rose.
I think the voters are actually hoping that this whole thing is brought to an end and that now we can begin anew with a second Trump term.
And that term starts on Monday, January 20th. Caroline Frasutti, VOA News.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with football as the elite club competition on the continent, the CAF Champions League, returns this Friday with teams across all groups battling to secure quarterfinal spots. Al Hilal of Sudan is the only team assured of progression, leaving the other clubs fighting for the remaining slots. On Friday, MC Alger will face TP Mazembe, while Al-Hilal Omdurman will face Young Africans on Sunday in Group A. In Group B, Maimema Union will face Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa, while FAR Rabat and Raja Casablanca will be involved in a derby that will be the highlight of this weekend's fixtures. In Group C, Stade Abidjan will face Al-Hapli, while Orlando Pirates will confront CR Bouzidad. Sagrada Esperanca and Pyramids will trade tackles in Group D, while Juliba and Esperance will square it out for a place in the quarterfinals. And now to netball, where Ugandan's netball team, the She Cranes, has intensified training ahead of the Netball Nations Cup due from February the 1st to the 4th in Nottingham, England. The team will face fellow giants England, South Africa and Malawi in the four-day tournament. Uganda started preparations for the tournament earlier this week. Rachel Nayunga, She Cranes goal attacker, says the team is looking to use the tournament to iron out their shortcomings that saw them fall to South Africa in the finals of the Netball Africa Cup.
We want to win, seriously. They called us because they know our team is good. Uganda is a good team and everyone is good in shape. Our coaches are good, our players are good, and I know we're good to go.
In athletics, defending Boston Marathon champions, Kenya's Helen Obiri and Ethiopia's Cissé Lema are among the many star names in the elite fields for the World Athletics Platinum Label Road Race scheduled for the 21st of April. Obiri, the only woman in history to have won all titles indoors, outdoors, and at cross country, is aiming to become the first woman to achieve three consecutive Boston Marathon wins since Fatuma Ruba achieved the feat in 1999. Obiri is one of the several strong Kenyans in the field, alongside two-time Boston winner Edna Kiplagat, 2022 New York Marathon winner Sharon Lokedi, Hamburg Marathon champion Irene Cheptai, and 2012 Boston Marathon winner Sharon Chirap. In cricket news, South Africa's Sports Minister Gayton McKenzie has said that he supports calls for a boycott of Afghanistan in the Champions Trophy in Pakistan, adding his voice to those of British politicians who have called on England not to play them next month. England and South Africa share the same group with Afghanistan in the one-day international competition and are under pressure to boycott the fixtures in response to the Taliban government's crackdown on women's rights since returning to power in August 2021. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. That's it for this Friday, January 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.